Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Author Chats, hosted by Elizabeth Kelly. In each episode, we talk with writers about their recent works. What inspired them? What challenges did they face? And what impact will their work have on your life?
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today, we are honored to have with us David Latt, who has written the critically acclaimed novel, Supreme Ambitions. Welcome, David.
Thanks so much for having me, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you for writing this book, and thank you for joining us. David, I'm going to ask you the question that probably everyone wants to ask you, even after they get only 15 minutes into your wonderful new book. How much of this is fact, and how much of this is fiction?
Well, it is a novel, but I like to think of it as a highly realistic novel. So I would describe it as like most works of fiction, a mix of both the true and the made up. I myself was a law clerk for the Ninth Circuit, which is where the book is set, although a number of years ago, and there are certainly aspects of my experience as a law clerk that inform the novel. But the particular events described in the book are, of course, fictional.
And David, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the geographical compositions of the different federal court circuits, where is the Ninth Circuit?
So the Ninth Circuit covers about 9 western states, as well as, I think, some far-flung islands. So the largest state in it, of course, is California, but it also includes the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, Hawaii. When I clerked for the Ninth Circuit, I clerked for Judge O'Scanlan, who's based in Portland, Oregon. But it covers a huge amount of territory, and in terms of population, and also, I believe, caseload, it is the largest of the regional federal appeals courts.
And based on the states that you just ticked off, a huge, huge diversity of jurisdictions. Now, David, on the book jacket for Supreme Ambitions, you have a number of glowing testimonials from all sorts of judicial rock stars, like Judge Posner of the Seventh Circuit, Chief Judge Kaczynski of the Ninth Circuit, and Judge Richard Kopf of the District of Nebraska, who also maintains a wonderful blog called Hercules and the Umpire. In the meantime, have you had any pushback from other judges or maybe former colleagues?
You know, it's interesting, Elizabeth. I actually have not. The book has been fairly well received by judges and by law clerks. There was a piece in the New York Times about the book where the reporter interviewed a couple of Ninth Circuit judges, and most of them said that they were glad that there was a book that was shining a light on their little corner of the world and explaining to people the inner workings of the federal judiciary. So I haven't really gotten much pushback from judges. There have been some clerks who have said that it has reminded them a lot of their clerkships, which can be both good and bad. I would say that for the majority of people, clerkships are great, great experiences, but some people say, oh my gosh, this scene or that scene reminded me of some traumatic thing that happened to me during my clerkship. So maybe it should come with a so-called trigger warning for people who had bad clerkships. But overall, the reception in chambers has been very good.
Well, you mentioned the New York Times review of your book, and that, quite frankly, is how I found out about it. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. We're talking with David Latt about his wonderful new book called Supreme Ambitions. You may already know David's name because he is the managing editor of an incredible blog called Above the Law. And David, how long have you been working on Above the Law?
So Above the Law launched in the summer of 2006, so we will turn 9 this coming August.
And you need more than a royal we, I believe, because you have a number of other writers on the staff, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So we have grown quite a bit. In the early days of Above the Law, it was basically just me. But now we have 4 full-time writer-editors, and we have about 24 or so outside contributors who write for our pages as well.
And did you begin Above the Law when you were still working as a clerk or afterwards?
So I actually had another blog before Above the Law, which was called Underneath Their Robes. And that blog was very much focused on the world of federal judges. And that was a blog that I maintained while I was still working as a federal prosecutor. I practiced law for a number of years before moving into media. And that blog, Underneath the Robes, was how I first got into blogging and eventually moved on, worked at a political blog for a couple of months, and then started Above the Law. So by the time that I started Above the Law, I was pretty much done with full-time legal practice.
And I'll get back to your novel in a moment, but did your employer, did your boss at the time know about Beneath the Robes?
No, actually. And my boss at the time was then U.S. Attorney Chris Christie, now governor of New Jersey and possible presidential
candidate.
Small world. Yes, indeed. So I had not told anyone about my blogging because I was doing it under a pseudonym. I called myself Article 3 Groupie after Article 3 of the Constitution, which establishes the federal judiciary, and I was pretending for purposes of this blog to be a woman. So it was definitely an unusual thing, which is why I adopted this pseudonym, partly also because I was appearing before federal judges by day and blogging about them, sometimes irreverently, by night. No, my boss did not know about my extracurricular activities.
Oh, well, getting back to supreme ambitions, all of the major characters in this book are fascinating, but also very complex. And I want to talk about Her Honor for a moment. She makes no bones about the fact that she is the CEO of her chambers. She doesn't want to get caught up in the minutiae of writing opinions. In fact, she tells Audrey at one point, rather imperiously, I believe, I am a federal judge. I do not deal in trivialities. One of the things that she's very frank about is she doesn't want to write opinions. And other than some editing, she doesn't want to get involved. David, how common is that among the federal judiciary? And is that a problem?
So in answer to your first question, I would say that it is not that common. I think that I wanted Judge Stinson, one of the two main characters of Supreme Ambitions, to embody a sort of extreme vision of an extreme version of one vision of judging, the judge as CEO. There's another, which is sort of like judge as judicial craftsman or craftswoman, and Judge Posner in his book Reflections on Judging sort of contrasts these views of judge as manager versus judge as intellectual. And I wanted Judge Stinson to really strongly embody the managerial version of the judge. So I think I exaggerated her a little bit. That said, there are a fair number of judges in the federal judiciary who arguably delegate too much work to their law clerks. For people who are not familiar, federal judges have anywhere from 3 to 4, the number can vary, some have 2, some even have as many as 5, law clerks who assist them with research and writing of opinions. And the amount of responsibility that judges delegate to their clerks varies from judge to judge. And some people, and I would say it is a problem in some chambers, some judges rely too heavily on their law clerks to be doing the role that really the judges were confirmed by the Senate and appointed by the president to carry out. So I did want to explore that particular problem in the book.
And that could become particularly problematic if a judge has one or more of lackluster clerks like Larry in your book. Now, you mentioned a few moments ago that federal judges have approximately 3 to 4 clerks. Is that true in the trial courts, that is to say, in the federal district courts?
So federal judges are allotted a certain number of staff slots. And typically, for the trial courts, you have 3 slots that you can spread out over law clerks and judicial assistants. The traditional model was to have 2 law clerks for a district judge and 1 judicial assistant or legal secretary. But what a number of judges have been doing in recent years is moving to a model of three law clerks, because they can always divide out the judicial assistant jobs or roles among the law clerks, but they can't necessarily get the judicial assistant to do legal research that the law clerks, who are recent, typically recent law school graduates, are able to do. So that's why I think the three clerk model is becoming more common among trial judges. There are still some judges who have two law clerks and one judicial assistant.
Now, one of the most endearing figures in your book is Harvetta, the good friend of Audrey and also a clerk in the state Supreme Court. Is Harvetta based on anyone you know or anyone you've worked with?
No, she was really, she was definitely one of the characters who was much more a figment of my own personal imagination. There are some secondary characters who are loosely based on real-life figures, so in that respect, the novel's a bit of a Romana Clay, so to speak. But Harvetta was probably more imagined than many of the others.
One of the things that is most sobering about your book is how frank so many of the characters are within about the legal hierarchy. That is to say, Ivy League institutions versus other law schools, appellate courts versus district courts, federal courts versus state courts. Is all of that true? And is that dialogue realistic?
So I do think that there is a huge amount of status consciousness and status anxiety within the legal profession. And one of the things I wanted to explore in the book was how this kind of elitism and this kind of chasing after accolades can sometimes become somewhat toxic. I think that the book, titled Supreme Ambitions, explores both the upside and the downside of having these ambitions. And these ambitions are often to go higher in that hierarchy you just mentioned. So I do think that concern with where you stand in the pecking order is definitely realistic. One of the things I wanted to explore with Harvetta, who is clerking for a state rather than federal court and who graduates from a non-elite law school, is that you
yeah,
can have...
Yeah, I think you call her law school a triple T. Tell us what that means.
I have to clarify for the record, Elizabeth, I did not invent the term. It was invented by somebody on the internet. But it is a term used derisively to refer to lower-ranked law schools by people who tend to be snobs. And the acronym is TTT, and it's back when U.S. News had four tiers of rankings, the TTT acronym was supposed to stand for third-tier toilet, because there used to be four tiers of law schools. Now U.S. News has changed their rankings, so the term is not quite as accurate in terms of embodying the U.S. News system. But the U.S. News rankings are a good example of how somebody spits out rankings and lawyers are fixated on them. People love rankings. People love being told, oh, this is where you stand, and this is where this person stands. And I think the law profession is probably more extreme about it than many, many others.
We're talking with David Latt about his critically acclaimed book, Supreme Ambitions, published by the American Bar Association. And David, if our readers want to get a copy of your book, where should they go and what should they do?
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity, Elizabeth. It is available on Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble, both in stores and online. It's also available at certain independent bookstores around the country, including Politics and Prose in D.C. and Powell's in Portland, Oregon. So it is available, and it can also be ordered directly from the American Bar Association, which published the book as the first book in its new Anchorwick imprint, which is going to represent the ABA's foray into publishing legal fiction. So there are a lot of options for people to pick up the book.
There you have it. Final question for you, David, and I could talk to you all day, quite frankly. Is another novel in your future?
That is a question I am still asking myself, Elizabeth. I really enjoyed writing this book, and I've enjoyed also promoting it by speaking to folks like you and doing events in different cities around the country. But I kind of want to see where I am probably in a couple of months, see how the book has been received, and decide then. Because writing a book is a lot of fun. It is also a ton of work. So I think the jury is still out on a sequel.
Well, in any event, as I said earlier, this was a great read. Could not put it down. I must tell you, it interfered with a number of my other obligations. But nonetheless, glad I read it and great talking with you. Thanks again for joining us here on Author Chats.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to all of my listeners. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good week.